Welcome. The deep state has its hands in everything, and I was in the middle of it for decades. When I blew the whistle on the CIA's torture program, the deep state turned on me. It ruined my life, took away my rights, threw me in prison, but they didn't break me. I fought back, and I still do. I'm John Kiriakou. On my show, The Deep State, I take you behind the geopolitical moves, the color revolutions, behind the politics and the politicians. We shine a light on where the deep state is hiding. I want to bring on now Natalie and Clayton Morris, hosts of the hit YouTube show Redacted. I wanted to start with the Iran war. This thing seems to have just crept up on us. There was talk for a couple of days in advance, oh my gosh, we're going to attack Iran. But there was a little bit of a lead. I remember saying on one podcast that one of the most important lessons I learned at the CIA was if you really want to understand American military intentions, watch naval movements. If the U.S. sends aircraft carrier strike groups, also called aircraft carrier battle groups, which is the carrier, all the associated fighter jets, and either 11 or 12 support ships, including destroyers and warships and battleships and all different kinds of things, you're not going to send all of that halfway around the world if you're not going to use it. And so when the White House ordered the first aircraft carrier battle group, the USS Abraham Lincoln, to go to the Arabian Sea, I thought, okay, that's not good news, but I can't draw any conclusions. When the White House sent the USS Gerald R. Ford, then it was a different story. I happened to be in the Gulf last week, and I was in the Emirates, and a senior government official said to me, well, what do you think? Do you think you're going to hit the Iranians or no? And I said, I hate to say it, but yeah, I think we're going to hit the Iranians. And then sure enough, we did. Did you expect the U.S. to attack Iran like that? Did you expect Israel to do it without the United States? Or do you think that this decision was made earlier this year?
I think we did expect it, and it's been such a source of anxiety for over a year. I think I've been trying to review what I maybe believed from the Trump administration versus what's actually happening. They did not tell the truth about the war in Ukraine, but at least they had a platform of ending it, whereas the Kamala Harris campaign did not. But there was a lot of rhetoric in the Trump campaign about bombing Iran, and I thought, maybe that won't happen. Maybe the sort of overall rhetoric about no forever wars will trump the desire for a war with Iran inside the war hawks that clearly have remained inside the White House. But in just a year of the Trump administration, there have been at least two attacks by Israel on Iran, supported fully by the Trump administration. At the very least, in the two times that Iran was attacked by Israel, you know, Iran is calling it Operation True Promise 4, right, which accounts for the four times they have been attacked by the U.S. and Israel together in the last 2 years. So Epic Fury is just our propaganda. What their naming convention shows is that they continue to be attacked by the U.S. and Israel. Now, the Biden administration gave some kind of, oh, we're not down with this rhetoric, but still allowed it. The Trump administration's like, yeah, we're doing it. We're doing it with them. So I guess in hindsight, it's not surprising. It's incredibly disappointing. But again, the number four, we're on like Jaws 4. You know, are we going to get to 5? It just tells us that this was not going to stop until the full-blown conflict. It was brewing over. Yeah. That's how I feel about it.
Clayton, yeah. When either the U.S. or the Israelis, it's still unclear, killed Ayatollah Khamenei, there was this apparent expectation at the White House that Iran was a house of cards, the government was a house of cards, it was just going to collapse. I was on a podcast the other day, and I said, killing Khamenei was like killing the Pope. You can kill the Pope, but it's not going to bring down Catholicism. They're just going to appoint a new Pope. And right, it seems to me like the scenario in Iran is the same. You can kill Khamenei. It's no big deal. He's an 86-year-old man. It's not going to bring down Shiism. And the government is just going to appoint a new Grand Ayatollah. Is it really that simple, or am I missing something?
No, I think, well, I think at the heart of it, the Trump camp is maybe surrounded by sycophants who are telling Trump what he wants to hear, or at least platitudes in that regard, because, as you know, a number of generals were fired recently. There's been a number of high-ranking members of the military who I think were telling Trump the truth about what was to unfold in Iran, which is you're not going to be able to carry out a regime change operation from the air. It's never happened. Sure, you might be able to kill somebody, but you're going to carry out a regime change operation from a long-range weapons standpoint and change hearts and minds from the air. It's never going to happen. It's never happened. So these people were fired. And now, as you see these press conferences, it's almost like these people are living in some sort of a weird bubble, and they're being spoon-fed stories about how easy it was going to be in Iran. You just decapitate, take out the Ayatollah, and sure, everyone else will fall in line. Of course, that hasn't happened. And the protests, this is at the Western media blackout, of course, of all of this right now, is that you're blacking out what's actually happening in Israel. CNN even offhandedly admitted that on the air. Erin Burnett was live on TV, and she's like, oh, we can't show you that because the Israeli government doesn't want us to show you that and show you where it's coming from. So there's an admission of blackout on the Israeli side, but also on the Iranian side, millions of people in the streets. We were speaking with Professor Mirandi the other day, and he said, you know, the Western media won't show you this, but there are millions of people who came out to great under great threat to themselves of being bombed in the open air, being attacked while they're out protesting and saying, you know, down with Trump, down with Israel, rallying support and being very steadfast. But the Western media wants you to believe that these are all protesters who are going to be raising American flags and Israeli flags, which is hilarious. If you look at the protests, the carpet bombing that's happening in Tehran, perhaps, you know, as we speak over the past 24 hours, this idea that we care about the protesters, I just posted on X. Wait a minute. We were told that we're helping the Iranians. We're there to help the protesters. So then how do you help protesters? The best way to help protesters is to kill them and carpet bomb them.
Put them out of your misery.
Just bomb indiscriminately residential buildings. Like, so your whole argument about helping protesters is BS. But no, I think people are lying. I think, you know, people are lying to the to Trump's inner circle here, or they're intentionally doing it, that this was going to be some sort of a cakewalk, John.
You know, I've said before on podcasts, I've told this story before, but I think it bears repeating here. The night before we attacked Iraq back in 2003, at that time, I was the executive assistant to the CIA's deputy director for operations. And so there was a principals committee meeting. The principals committee is made up of the president, the vice president, the national security advisor, the secretary of state, the secretary of defense, the head of the CIA, and then one or two other people can be invited into the principals committee. So I was the note taker who sat silently behind the CIA director just taking my notes. And for whatever reason, the president didn't chair the meeting that night. Vice President Cheney chaired the meeting. And he asked the director of CENTCOM, the commander of CENTCOM, General Tommy Franks, to begin the briefing. And he started with what was called an order of battle briefing, which I've always hated because they're so boring and they mean nothing to me. And he says, well, elements of the 4th Mountain Infantry Division are moving south 20 kilometers, and then the 3rd Airborne is going to move here, and then this guy is moving here. And I don't care where your little men move on the map. I don't care. And it doesn't matter anyway. So anyway, at the very end of his briefing, he says, if all goes as planned, we can be in Tehran by August. And George Tenet, the CIA director at the time, discreetly reaches over and turns off his microphone, and he turns to me and he says, did he say Tehran or did he say Baghdad? And I said, he said Tehran. And George says, are these people insane? So I wrote it down. Anyway, we finished the meeting, and as we're all getting up, the microphones are still live, one of the senior directors at the National Security Council says, like giddily, he says, when we cross that border tomorrow, they're going to throw flowers at us. So I go back to my office in the deputy director's suite, and he said, how was the principal's committee? And I said, did you know we were going to attack Iran? And he goes, are they still talking about that? We're not going to attack Iran. And I said, do these people know nothing about history? And he said, no, they know nothing about history. Now, this was 24 years ago this month. And here we are attacking Iran because we don't know history. Clayton, you're exactly right. You cannot overthrow a government with air power. And Donald Trump said, no boots on the ground, no boots on the ground, no boots on the ground. Until Pete Hegseth said, well, I'm not going to make any promises about boots on the ground. And then here we are.
Right, now
yeah, and now the president is saying, well, I don't
know.
They're
saber-rattling this idea of boots on the ground.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And why? And right, why would you want boots on the ground? Because you've convinced yourself that as soon as we cross that border, they're going to throw flowers at us.
Right.
Yeah, this is what's really riling me up on X, and I should not have arguments with idiots, but I do, because sometimes it's cathartic.
But it also gets it off the hook that I don't have to be yelled at as a husband.
Right.
There you
know,
go.
Like, it's like, hey, you know,
everybody's
just fight with
happy.
Other people.
So I'm getting a lot of, oh, no, they love it. They're cheering that we're there. They're so happy. And I'm like, hey, a-hole, do you know the difference between a Persian woman who's wearing a Lululemon top with tattooed eyeliner
in Beverly
in
Hills.
Los Angeles?
Yeah.
Right. Versus an actual Iranian woman who lives in Iran. Do you know the difference? Because those are two very different things. They do not. They think that, the Beverly Hills Persian protesters are representative of the will of the Iranian people, and I can't take it. So, yeah, I do have a lot of arguments with a-holes about that. I shouldn't. It's not worth my time.
Well, Tucker brought up the other night in his monologue, I thought it was on that exact point, which is this idea that we shouldn't be prosecuting wars in other countries based on what, like, the Persian population in Los Angeles thinks about it. Like, that's fine that they can be supportive and have their own opinions about it, but are we going to be prosecuting wars about every group, every minority group
exactly.
in the United States around the world? Let's go into Cuba next. Let's go into Ecuador, which, by the way, it looks like we are.
Yeah.
So, I mean, are we just, the U.S. military just does the will of minority groups in Los Angeles? That's our plan now?
You know, and CNN and MSNBC, now called MS Now, keep replaying the same video of this demonstration in Los Angeles with 200 people. Not 200,000 people. 200 people,
right.
Half of them flying this old flag with the Shah's coat of arms on it. Nobody in Iran wants the Shah or the crown prince or whatever he calls himself today.
The CIA. Oh, could you talk about... I wanted to ask you about that, Joe. I mean... He's on 60 Minutes this past Sunday.
Right.
I mean, they're elevating him. This is a CIA-backed
yes.
ground print, whatever you want to call him. Like, this is like the CIA's guy right
yes.
now.
Yes, he's the CIA's guy. And, you know, the funny thing is, there's a popular conservative podcaster here in the U.S. named Patrick Bet-David. I went on Patrick mm-hmm. Bet-David's podcast, I don't know, 6 or 8 months ago, I guess. It's in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Great conversation. He happens to be Iranian, but of Armenian and Assyrian extraction. He's very pro-Israel. And he's had Donald Trump on his podcast. Well, somebody asked him recently why he hasn't had Reza Pahlavi, the crown prince of Iran. And he said that he had called repeatedly, and Reza Pahlavi just never bothered to return the calls. And so finally... Either Reza Pahlavi saw this or somebody saw it and told him and said, look, you need to go on Patrick Bet-David's podcast. He goes on the podcast and he says, I don't think I want to go back to Iran. My life is here. I've been here since 1979. My kids were raised here. My family's here. I think I'm happy just kind of running things from behind the scenes. I'll do it from Washington. And people are like, buddy, that's not the plan. Either you're the king and you're taking the CIA's money to be the king, or you're not. But you can't just take the CIA's money and sit fat and happy in McLean, Virginia, and let other people do your dirty work. So which one's it going to be? And there's no answer. There's no response. In the meantime, these clowns are dancing in Beverly Hills, waving the Shah's flag. Like, that actually means something on the streets of Tehran. It doesn't mean anything on the streets of Tehran. I said on a podcast the other day, if Reza Pahlavi goes back to Iran, he will not survive the walk from the airplane to the terminal. Nobody right. wants him back. Nobody.
Yeah. Also, I'm very curious about these Lululemon wearers in Beverly Hills, how you can celebrate something in the streets when 160 young girls were bombed to start this war.
That's right.
The disconnect of that is truly mind-boggling, which makes me feel like there must have been some kind of Soros-backed push to get them in the streets to do something quite so tone-deaf.
You know, I have to agree. And speaking about this just nauseating, horrible, criminal attack on a girls' school, at least 160 children killed, still bodies in the rubble that haven't been pulled out yet. My first thought was, those Israelis, they always target civilians, always. And then the New York Times reported over the weekend that it was actually the CIA that was gathering the targeting information and providing it to the Israelis. That's new. When I was at the CIA, that was not the case at all. The CIA collected targeting information for the U.S. military to use. It didn't provide it to other countries. What do you guys make of that? What should we make of that?
Well, if you see that the CIA running the show, I mean, they're working in lockstep. They've always worked in lockstep. Of course, Mossad, as you know, and the CIA working on this, but providing the targeting information. And then that goes to the further story, which has come out over the last 24, 48 hours about the CIA now planning to coordinate with the Kurds.
Right.
In order to carry out this operation on the ground inside of Iran. Like, is this, forgive my ignorance on this, John. I mean, you were obviously inside the CIA, but that sounds to me like a massive operation that you're going to coordinate basically a land invasion with the Kurds and coordinate also U.S. boots on the ground in order to have a full regime change operation. Like,
Massive.
I mean, to me, it seems like the CIA's operations in the past have been pinprick, targeted, Maidan coup.
That's right.
Using a select group of individuals. Now you're talking about a coordination of a Kurdish army? I mean, what?
When we come back, we will have more with the hosts of Redacted. I'm John Kiriakou, and this is The Deep State. Stay right there. We're joined back again today by our guests, Natalie and Clayton Morris. They're the hosts of the hit show Redacted. As huge as the Iraq invasion was back in early 2003, the CIA footprint was very, very small. It was all military.
Right.
It was all, you know, combat operations. The CIA was busy, you know, setting up clandestine radio stations in northern Iraq, for example. Trying to recruit, you know, whomever, whatever person or group of people had access to Baghdad that could tell us about traffic, where military vehicles were moving, whatever. Very small presence. What they're talking about today is going to require literally hundreds of thousands of people, hundreds of thousands of armed people. Coming from where? Coming from Azerbaijan? Coming from Iraq? Well, guess what? We overthrew Saddam Hussein, and so Iraq is a Shia Muslim nation right now. They actually have good relations with Iran, and they don't want to plunge themselves into another war. They haven't dug themselves out of the last one. And so why in the world would the Iraqi government, even if it were sympathetic to ideas of Kurdish nationalism and Kurdish independence, why would they put their own country's stability on the line to help Iranian Kurds who have never had an independent country? At least the Iraqi Kurds, very briefly, in 1946 until I think 1949, had an independent Kurdistan. That's never happened in Iraq.
Right.
I don't know who's advising the White House.
Not to mention the general attitude against U.S. interventionalism, which they sniff out, you know, in most Eastern countries now. They know it, you know, from Russia to China, Taiwan. Like, it's a thing. It's basically a pandemic. It's an epidemic, is that they know it. And so why would Iraq, after what we did to them, have any motivation to even indirectly help U.S. imperialism? It's ridiculous
and
to think.
Natalie, you make me think of an important side issue here. A full-fledged war in the Middle East. And I think it's rapidly expanding to be a region-wide war. The Iranians sent missiles to Cyprus yesterday. They sent a missile to Turkey today that was intercepted. We're recording this on Wednesday. It looks very much like it's going to expand. What kind of signal does that send to, let's say, the Chinese over Taiwan, or to the Russians, frankly, on Ukraine? Does it say, look, we accept the new reality of a multipolar world. We're going to handle this situation in the Middle East. We don't care what the Chinese do in Taiwan. Not that the Chinese necessarily want to do anything at all in Taiwan. We don't care what the Russians do with Ukraine. Actually, Ukraine was a part of the Soviet Union, so it's the Russian sphere of influence anyway. But what is the message, the unspoken message that's coming out of Washington?
Well, it's very curious because, again, you mentioned this on, we're recording on Wednesday. On Tuesday, the United States is carrying out military operations in Ecuador.
Yeah.
And so the perception seems to be we can handle it all. We're good in every hemisphere. We're fine. We have the military might, the manpower, the equipment. And the human mind has a hard time believing that because resources are finite. Military personnel is finite, and so is the equipment. Now, President Trump this week is saying, no, we have all the equipment. Unfortunately, Joe Biden sent a lot of it to Zelensky. We're now calling him P.T. Barnum, which says to the Russians, I'm sure, they're not that concerned over here. They simply cannot be. They've ranked. We've ranked our priorities on our to-do list, and it seems that Ukraine has fallen down several notches, which makes for good fun. And again, I admit that X provides me a lot of personal entertainment. Watching Zelensky's X feed, because he is still out there professionally producing. It's so funny. These videos of him walking down the street and about to do a hearty handshake with Macron or whatever leader is willing to give him some time, or he's on the phone. It's really actually comical because he's pretending that he is still on the cover of Vogue, that people are still watching him command this war of valor. That's not it at all. So that's fun, at least, to watch him make a fool of himself if, you know, you're looking for entertainment.
Well, I also think the message, John, to these Gulf states is we're not going to protect you.
We can't protect you.
We're not going to, and we can't. And I think you're seeing that now. Of course, even the Wall Street Journal had the Rupert Murdoch cojones to admit that the United States is running out of missiles, something we've been reporting here on this show for a couple of years, because we wanted to give all of our, you know, Patriot missile systems and everything else that we had to Ukraine.
Mm-hmm.
And we weren't building them fast enough. And of course, now with modern drone warfare, everything has changed. Like, we're fast tracking, you know, aircraft carriers, which of course cannot stop hypersonic missiles. So we're caught in this like post-World War II weird dynamic where our United States military is fighting this Cold War, and conditions on the ground have completely changed. And there's an admission now that we can't stop these Iranian drones, which are hitting U.S. targets. So there's this message to these Arab states, like, sorry, Dubai, sorry, the UAE, sorry, Jordan, sorry, Oman, sorry, Bahrain. Like, we can't actually do anything to protect you. And by the way, we're not going to, because we can't. So that message is loud. And it's also showing our cards to the Russians and Chinese, who, according to reports, the Chinese have been providing telemetry and targeting data specifically on U.S. bases, down to knowing where like CIA officers are on certain buildings and on what floor they are and where Mossad is in certain buildings throughout the region. Like, the Chinese are actively helping Iran in this. Are we surprised by that? So I think we're really showing our hand in this.
I have to agree with you. There was a report yesterday, the day before, that that the Iranians targeted specifically the CIA station in Riyadh. They knew what floor it was on, they knew what side of the building it was on, and that's where they sent their suicide drones. There was damage, there was a fire. There was no confirmation, of course, from the U.S. that, well, that there's even a CIA station in Riyadh, let alone that it was hit by by Iranian drones. But yeah, this is, the United States appears to have bitten off more than it could chew. Natalie and Clayton, thanks very much for being with us today. And thank you for watching. This is The Deep State. I'm John Kiriakou. We'll see you next time.